Stand by. We're about to begin. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Jennifer Chen. Ms. Chen, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dwayne, and welcome everyone to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chen, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenter is Scott McClure. Scott is currently an advisory software engineer working as a CICS Level 2 support representative. He joined the CICS group in August 1989. His focus is to provide remote support to CICS customers by assisting them with problem determination. Today's topic is debugging storage violations in CICS. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. If the view is too small, under view at the top of the e-meeting toolbar, make sure to make share area full screen and fit shared area to window is unchecked, or just click on default view. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking View Presentation link, or by going to any IBM.com site and type in 700-7891 in the search box. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Scott.
Thank you, Jan. And good day to everybody. Thanks for joining this session on debugging storage violations in CICS. The presentation you're looking at does have a lot of notes pages that we will not be seeing on the actual screen as we go through the presentation. But if, when I say next page, if the screen doesn't match just your page that you're looking at, just go to the next page. Next page, please. Okay, our agenda today is to look at types of storage violations, mainly going to be picking on the CICS detected storage violations. We'll be going over what are known as SAAs and check zones, as well as SCEs and SCFs. And then we have two scenarios of storage violations that we'll actually walk through to debug. Next page, please. Okay, storage violation types. There are two basic types of storage violations. Those detected by CICS are reported, normally reported with a DFHSM 0102 message, and then the undetected storage violations, not detected by CICS. Those are normally show up as OC4s, those type of problems, and they require different problem determination techniques, such as the level 2 rep maybe giving you a DFH trap or something like that to catch the violation itself. But we're going to pick on the KICS detected problems that are reported by the SMO-102s. Next page, please. Okay, so on CICS detected storage violations, there's an initial or a duplicate storage accounting area known as an SAA. These are associated with TIOA storage. There's a leading and a trailing check zone of user task storage elements that are detected during violations as well, and we detect them for corruption. Storage violations are detected at free main time and not when the violation actually happens. SAA chains are checked when an individual element is requested to be freed, at least up to the target area. SAA chains are checked during free main of storage belonging to a PCTTE after the last output has taken place. Check zones are areas that are checked during freemaking of a specific user task storage element. And their chains are checked during freemaking of all the user task storage during task termination, which is normally when we will see a storage violation actually being reported. The SAAs, we're just briefly going to go over. Again, they're associated with TIOAs, and the CSSE debug trap can be used to catch those, but this presentation is mainly going to pick on the storage check zones that you're normally used to seeing overlaid. Next page, please. So again, we're going to briefly go over SAAs. SAAs are 8 bytes long, and the first 8 bytes of the TIOA are known as the initial or the leading SAA, and the last 8 bytes of the TIOA are known as a duplicate or a trailing SAA. The first word indicates the storage class and the length. The first byte of the first word represents the storage class itself. TIOAs are known as 85 storage. And then the last 2 bytes of the first word represents the length of the TIOA itself. And that length includes the initial SAA and all the way up to the, and including the usable portion of the TIOA only, meaning it doesn't include the length of the trailing SAA. The second word is a chain pointer, and it will point to another TIOA in the chain, or it will point to the TCTTE at +4 into a TCTTE that owns that TIOA itself. The way CICS detects the violation is we do comparison of the initial and the duplicate SAA at freemain time, and when they're not equal, we have detected the violation. Next page, please. This is an example of an SAA. As I said, the 85 indicates the type of storage or TIOA in the first word, the first byte. The 118 in that first word is the actual length of the TIOA, and the second word will be the chain pointer, either pointing to another TIOA or the owning TCTTE. Got a note at the bottom of this page that something nice to remember, and you'll see why it's important later when we do check zones, but if you're looking for the application that did the get main request for the SAA itself, you need to understand that the address that's returned on the get main request is that of the leading SAA, or offset 0, which would point to the 85 itself. We'll see why that's important to know when we get into check zones, because it's a little different and you need to be aware of that. Next page, please. That's all I'm really going to say about check SAAs, and we're going to really concentrate on check zones and task storage violations. Check zones are very similar to SAAs. They're also 8 bytes long. The first 8 bytes are known as the leading check zone, and the last 8 bytes are known as the trailing check zone. In the first word, byte 0 through 3 indicate the task subfool name. And I give you the 4 subpools there, C00, which is kicks above the line storage, or ECDSA, M00, which is kicks below the line storage, or CDSA, U00 is user above the line storage, or EUDSA, and B00 for user below the line storage, or UDSA. Bytes 4 through 7 of that first word indicate the owning task number. And there are no chain pointers for check zones, as storage managers are aware of all the task storage and their length using what are known as storage element descriptors, or SCEs, and then free storage descriptors known as SCFs. The same way as SAA, CICS detects when there's a violation by comparing the leading and the trailing check zone at freemain time to detect a possible overlay. Next page, please. Here's an example of a check zone. It's for kick storage below the line, and therefore my first word has the M00, and the second word has the actual task number. In this case, the task number 5 would be owning this piece of storage. And then at the bottom of the page, you can see the trailing check zone that matches. And the comparison is done against those two things to detect a violation. And we won't detect a violation in between these points. We only detect if leading and trailing check zones, any part of it doesn't match. Next page, please. So just to introduce SCEs and SCFs, this is an example of an SCE and an SCF. The SCEs indicate or represent task allocated storage. Within each SCE or SCF, the third word will contain the location of the storage itself, which will be pointing to the leading check zone. The fourth word contains the length of the storage for that piece. So in our first example, the first SCE, it lives at address 46000 and it's text 470 bytes long. At the bottom of the page, and I tried to do this for most of the pages, when I show you output from a dump like this, I gave you the actual verbex command that was used to show this output or how to get this output. When a git main is done for an application, what CICS will do is take the requested amount of storage and round that up to the next double word boundary and then add hex 10 bytes to it and git main that amount of storage. And we add the 10 bytes so we can add the beginning and trailing check zones. So for instance, if a git main request was for hex 5 Charlie bytes, we would round that up to hex 60, add hex 10 to it for the check zones, and we would actually git main hex 70 bytes of storage. Next page, please. Okay, now we're going to actually get into debugging an SMO-102. It's reported by DFH SMO-102, and the important part of that message will be the actual code that's pointed out in the message itself. In this case, we have an OFOX-OCharlie. It's important to look up that OFOX-OCharlie, what that means, within the Kix Trace Entries manual. So that would be an SM-OFOX-OCharlie. Next page, please. So that's what I've done here. I've looked it up in the manual for SM-OFOX-OCharlie, and this is showing what an SM-OFOX-OCharlie actually offers us. And you can see under the data portion, the data area 1 is just the storage manager parm list. But data area 2 is the actual length of the storage element. Data area 4 is the first 512 bytes, that's a maximum, of the storage element itself. Data area 5 is the last 512 bytes, also a maximum of the actual piece of storage that's affected. Data area 6 is data that's preceding the storage element that was having the problem up till 1K max. And data area 7 is data following the particular storage element up to a 1K max. Okay, next page, please. So we had an SMO-102 reported for OFOX-OCharlie. This is an example of abbreviated trace, which is real good to get a quick look at what was happening at the time, and it really just gives you, it doesn't give you all the information you need, and it's just a quick look. If we look at this one, we can see that from the top that task 515 was actually running, and we can see that he was going to task termination. So when he was going through termination, you can see the smaller entry there at trace entry 370, it looks like, where we're releasing the transaction storage. And we detected there was a problem. We see the XMIQ entry and exits and the TFIQ entry and exit trace entries, which is actually incrementing the storage violation count against the actual transaction as well as the terminal. And then we see our SM-OFOX-OCharlie exception trace entry indicating that we had a storage check fail. And it shows that the address of the storage there in the abbreviated trace was 1007.0, followed by us putting out the SM0102 message. Next page, please. That was the abbreviated trace. The full trace is actually going to give us a lot more information. We're looking at the SMO Foxtrot-Charlie trace entry. We can see in date area 2, it gives us the address of the storage that was affected or had the problem. Date area 3 tells us the length of that storage, which was 3.0. And date area 4, we see the beginning of that storage. And we can see in the eye catcher portion that the beginning check zone appears to be intact. It looks good. It's B000 with the 515 task number in it. So that looks good. Next page, please. Date area 5 shows us the end of that piece of storage, and if we go to the very end of it, that should be the trailing check zone. And we can see that it's definitely overlaid. It has this ..... ...h.... ...h.... in it instead of our normal check zone that we're like that would match the beginning check zone. Data area 6 is up to a 1K max of storage that's preceding this affected piece of storage. And, well, from data area 5, we know that our trailing check zone is overlaid. Data area 6 is the previous storage to that, and I want to say that's probably a trailing check zone of storage above him. Data area 7 is storage following our overlaid check zone. Next page, please. So if we go into Storage Manager and actually find this storage using the SCEs and the SCFs, remember, our storage that was affected was the 1007.0, and it was 3.0 long, and we can see our SCE there. And if you actually laid these SCEs out with the SCFs, you can see that we actually just take a page of storage and we break it up, and the SCEs are the allocated pieces of storage, and the SCFs is the rest of that page or free storage. Next page, please. Oh, excuse me. Can we back up, please? I didn't point out, we didn't talk much about it, a SCA at the top of the page, the subpool control area. That's actually an anchor block for all the pieces of storage a task might own. And there's a SCA for each piece of storage or each type of storage. For instance, this is the Baker 00 type of storage. There's also a SCA for M00, et cetera. I just wanted to point out in the SCA at offset 50 is a pointer to the head of the chain of the SCEs, and offset 60 would be the pointer to the head of the SCF. Next page, please. This is basically the same thing we looked at within the storage manager. We saw the SCEs and all that and all the layout. This is actually a storage browse of the same thing. 1007.0, which is about in the middle of the page, was our piece of storage that was violated. Remember, our trailing check zone was overlaid. And we can see previous to this storage at 1004.70, we had a piece of storage that was allocated. We can see the leading and trailing check zones are intact of the piece of storage just prior to this affected piece of storage, because our Baker 00515 leading and trailing check zones are intact for that piece of storage. But if we look at our affected piece of storage, 1007.0, we know that our trailing check zone is overlaid. That piece of storage at 100 Baker Able 0 was actually an SCF, or a freed piece of storage, or hasn't been allocated to the task yet. So therefore, there's no check zone on him yet. The only way you get a check zone is when a get main is done for that storage, and then we tack on the check zone. So all we can really tell right now is that there's at least an 8-byte overlay of the trailing check zone. the 00004, 00Charlie 8, 00Charlie 8, 00Charlie 8. I'm just trying to point out that all we can tell right now is the overlay is at least 8 bytes. We don't know if he continued on further into that next piece of storage because that next piece of storage was an SCF. If it had been an SCE or an allocated piece of storage and had the check zone on it, we would have been able to tell if it continued on or not. Next page, please. It's nice to know who did the get main for the piece of storage itself. And what I pointed out earlier about the SCAs and the get mained address, etc., I want to point out on task storage when a get main's done, we always pass back the address of plus 8 because we're passing over the beginning check zone. So in our case, if we were looking for a get main for 1007.00, we would actually add 8 to that and do a find in the trace for 1007.8. And that's what I've done here. And you can see the SMO Charlie 02 shows the exit of the get main with our address 1007.8. And if I backed up in trace, I would find the EIP entry get main entry, trace entry. And to know who did that, you would look at the ret value or the reg 14, and would in this case is 500.Charlie10Able2. It's nice to know when you have a violation or who get mained that piece of storage in the first place. Next page, please. So we now have our RET address or our Reg 14 address, and what I did was I formatted out loader domain with LD equals 1, and what I'm looking for is a load point address down the load point column that will get me as close to that Reg 14 value without going over, and that brings me to this read update program name, load point Charlie10000. Notice my entry point's the same, and if I look under the CSEC column, I've got a DFH YA640, which tells me that that's a stub, or it's an assembler stub. So when you have an assembler stub like that, you need to be aware that an assembler stub is hex 28 bytes long, so you need to add 28 to the load point address of Charlie10000 to use, and then once that addition is done, you subtract that from your Reg 14 value to get an offset into the module that did that get main. Next page, please. This is just a storage browse of that address, Charlie10000. Remember I told you the stub itself is 28 bytes long, so if I go hex 28 in, I see a baller to 28 bytes past that, which brings you to the Charlie10050 address, and you can see that 90 easy Charlie dog 00 Charlie is a store multiple. Next page, please. So what we've done, or what we've found, is that task 515 was in termination process when the storage violation was determined. We found we had an SMO102 message that pointed out the OFOX0Charlie code, and we found that trace entry in the trace, and found that our violated piece of storage was located at 1007.0. Trace entry also indicated that the piece of storage was hex 3.0 bytes long, and if you run into a trace point that might not give you that storage or the length of that storage, I've also shown you how to go actually into the storage manager and find that length by looking at the fourth word of the SCE. We know that the trailing check zone was overlaid with the value of 0004, 00 Charlie 8, 00 Charlie 8, 00 Charlie 8. All we can tell right now is that the violation was at least hex 8 bytes long, and that's because the piece of storage following that trailing check zone was not allocated and did not have a check zone on him, so we don't know if he really ran past or not. We know that Read Update was the name of the program that did the get man for that storage. And most likely, 99% of the time, that application likely wrote past his allocated storage. Now, with an SMO 102 dump, that's about all we can tell. We can't really tell, well, when was it violated and where or why, et cetera. We just can identify the storage and the overlay itself. Next page, please. So that's where we, level two will ask you to turn on the storage violation trap using CSFE. The storage violation trap is a built-in storage trap, and it runs each time an old-style AP trace entry is written. What I mean by an old-style AP trace entry is that it has the old field A, field B, if you're familiar with earlier releases of CICS. Now, if you're going to run this storage violation trap, you need to ensure level 1 trace is turned on for all components and level 1-2 for the EI component. The 1-2 on the EI component is just nice because the trace will show you the entire command that was issued. You need to ensure, if you have a monitoring package, that your monitoring package is not suppressing the EI trace entries, because those EI trace entries are probably the most important of all. This storage violation trap will check all the storage areas on the transaction storage chain for the current task. It won't run all tasks in the system, just the current tasks. So therefore, the overhead of running them is likely not even going to be felt. But when you have this storage violation trap running, when it detects there is a violation, we will produce an SMO103 dump, and then we'll turn the trap off itself. That trap will actually catch the violation within a window that's much closer to when the violation actually happened, meaning not at task termination time, but when the task was running and likely overlaid himself and we caught it during the run. If that window is still too large, then you would consider adding additional user trace points to the application using the execkix enter trace num command. That would close in your window a lot further. If for example, we discovered a violation was in a piece of code that between two points there was 1,000 lines of code, and you still can't narrow in any closer than that, then you would add additional trace points within your application to maybe cut it in half, put one in the middle at least, so you know it's in the first 500 commands or the last 500 lines of code. The way you turn on the trap is via a SIP farm called CHKSTSK. When you code that to equal current, the trap is on. Equal to none, the trap is off. You can also manually turn this trap on using CSFE debug, CHKSTSK equals current or none. Next page, please. So that's what I've done. I've turned on the trap to catch this violation that we just looked at in the SMO 102, and it caught the culprit and it produced an SMO 103 dump. And again, the most important part of that message would be the code that's produced, in this case an 0932. Next page, please. So I've looked up the SMO 932 in the KIX Trace manual just to see what it offers, and the important parts of these data entries would be data area 3, the address of our storage that was violated, data area 4 being the first 128 bytes of that piece of storage, and data area 5 being the last 16 bytes of the storage. Next page, please. Again, just quickly getting an idea of what was going on at the time, looking at an abbreviated trace that's not going to offer us all the information we need, but gives us a quick look. I start at the top. We have a start of program read update, and then he a git main was issued. And then the SMCK, the entries in green, entry check storage, exit check storage. That's where my storage violation trap is actually running. And he entered and he exited okay. That means the trap ran, he found no problems, and continued doing his thing. The exec entry git mains in purple are due to have an EI1-2 giving us an exploded view of actually all everything that was issued, and we can see on the iCatcher portion that the git main was for hex 3 Baker Charlie, and we got that git main that storage at 1007.8 in this case. Then the exit of the git main. The exit of the git main made the trap run again, the SMCK entry and exits. Everything was okay. The application then did a exec kick suspend, which caused my trap to run. I have the entry to the check to the trap, but I don't have my exit. This is where the violation was actually caught, and I see my XMIQ and TFIQ trace entries that are incrementing the storage violation count for the transaction and the terminal, and then I see my exception trace entry showing zone check failed. Next page, please. We really want to look at the full trace to get more information. Just going over the same thing we just did, we see that read update started. A git main was issued, and here I can show you what I meant by old style trace entries. You see the field A and the field B in the EIP entry git main, which triggers the trap to run, which we see in green, the SMCK's entry and exits. Everything was fine. I exited okay. Continue on writing the level 2 trace entries for the EIs, showing the git main. Next page, please. And the exit of the git main with our address, etc. Then we have another old-style EIP exit git main with the field A, field B, which triggers my trap again. My trap runs with the SMCK entries and exits, and exits okay. Then the application did the exec kick suspend. Again, I have my field A and field B on that trace entry, which triggers my trap to run. My SMCK entry check storage is put out. Next page, please. There's my famous XMIQ TFIQ to increment the counts, and then my exception trace entry showing me all the information I really need to see. State Area 3 shows me the address of the storage that was affected in this time. It is 1007.0. I can see by looking at date area 4 that my beginning check zone is intact. I have the Baker 000108. 108 is my task number. But date area 5 shows the last 16 bytes, and I can see that the trailing check zone is indeed overlaid with what we saw previous in the SMO102 instance. With the .h.h.h. One thing I didn't point out earlier is the AP domain on the SMO102s, because those are normally caught at task termination time. The task is actually going away, so if you're used to using AP domain to possibly look for these type of violations, AP domain is not going to be valuable in that scenario. But since we now have the trap on, you could actually use the AP domain because we caught the violation when the task was actually running and not termination time. And you would actually see it in the AP domain. I just wanted to mention that. In this trace entry, remember, some of them give you the length of the storage and some don't. In this case, this trace entry didn't. So we would have had to use the SMO domain to find this piece of storage to determine how long it was if we wanted to look at him in browse mode. Next page, please. So we know our trailing check zone is overlaid, and that's what I've done to see how long this piece of storage was. I went into the storage manager to find it. We're looking for 1007.0, which is that first SCE, and the fourth word is our length of 3.0. page, please. This is just a browse of that storage itself. Again, we can see our beginning check zone is intact, our trailing check zone is overlaid, and the following piece of storage, that 100 Baker Able Zero, was actually an SDF if we went back to look at it. And so, again, we can only tell right at this moment that at least 8 bytes of storage have been overlaid the trailing check zone. Next page, please. So when did we catch the violation? Or what was our window, more importantly, of when was the violation caught? Our window would be between the exit of that get main, where we can see our trap ran, the SMCK entries and exits, and the entry of the application doing the suspend commands. That's our window. And if we take the two reg 14 values on those two trace entries, which are highlighted in red, they point to Charlie 10 able 2 on the exit of the get main and the Charlie 10 Charlie 6 on the entry to the suspend. That's our window between those two reg 14 values. And that's who is responsible for this violation. So you would want to make note of those values. Next page, please. Again, if we went to loader domain to find out who that would be, we again end up with read update program. We know our load point address. If I added my hex 28 for my assembler stub, I've got enough information to subtract now from my reg 14 values to come up with offsets within that program read update. Next page, please. This is the program itself. I did the calculations, and I came up with offsets 7 able and 7 easy. 7 able is the address of the baller where I went off asking for the get main to be done. When I returned from when the get main was done and the application was given control back, I would have returned to offset 7 easy, where I did a load address, 3 Baker Charlie off of Reg 9, and if I look up all the way to the top at offset 56, I can see there's my get main for 3 Baker Charlie, and I actually did a set, the set Reg 9 to point at that storage. If I jump back down to 7 easy, I loaded address into Reg 9, where Reg 9 was pointing, my get main storage, plus 3 Baker Charlie, so I'm actually bumped him to point to the end of that storage. And then I did a move character of 32 bytes from offset 806 off of Reg 3, Reg 3 being a base reg within this application. That's where my, and the next thing that application does after that is he does the suspend at 9 easy as the baller off to the suspends. Right under the move character in purple, you see the exec kick suspend. Now, that's my window between the return of the get main and the execution of that suspend. And that, I agree, that's a very, very short window. This is a very simplified example. You could have thousands of lines of code in between there, and that's why I mentioned earlier if that window is so large that you may consider putting in additional user trace points to even close that window further. This is very simplified, but that's our window right there. That's my application that did the overlay, and the spelling instruction or the instruction that actually caused the overlay is that move character because I bumped Reg 9 pointing all the way down to that get main piece of storage. What did I move? The hex 32 bytes. If I go to the next page, please. This is what I actually moved. These, and remember our first 8 bytes of the violation was the 0004 00 Charlie 8 that we see at 80 able. Well, I also moved four additional bytes previous to that at 806 and 808. You see that, the 0040, 0020. Well, that would have been just previous to my trailing check zone. My check zone was actually overlaid with the 0004, 00 Charlie 8, blah, 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 the whole 32 bytes. So I now know that the violation was actually longer than we knew before. Next page, please. Just to prove that, showing a storage browse, we see at 100 Baker 94, that's where we actually started doing that move of 32 bytes of the 0040, 0020. That was fine moving that word, but when I moved the rest of the 32 bytes, the next word past that was my trailing check zone, thus causing the violation. And I can see that it continued on in the storage located at 100 Baker Able 0, continuing on. Next page, please. As I mentioned earlier, because we caught this violation with the trap turned on and during the run of the application instead of at termination time when I was freebanging storage, APU domain can be useful in these cases. You can either format the AP domain and do a find on DFHPD, continuing. You'll get a lot of those messages, but just look for DFHPD. But eventually, you should get to a PD message indicating the storage violation was detected. And as you can see, it indicates that the trailing SAA was invalid. Next page, please. So what have we found now? We found the program read update was the responsible party for the violation, and that the violation was caught between the execkick get main command issued at offset 78 and the execkick suspend command issued at offset 9 Charlie. This might be a little off because I may have not accounted for the baller, but and then when we inspected read update, it showed the register 9 originally pointed to the get main storage, but was incremented by 3 Baker Charlie just prior to the move character instruction, which moved hex 20 bytes or decimal 32 bytes, and that move instruction was the cause of the violation. Possible solutions, these are just possible solutions that I throw out. I understand there's many, many ways that could or things that could have been done to resolve this. But just real quickly, if you really wanted to move that data into that get main storage, you could adjust the incrementation of register 9 to a value that would have fell more within that get main piece of storage, allowing for the hex 20 bytes to be moved without overlaying the check zone. And then if you didn't really mean to do the move, then you could remove the move character instruction or possibly both the load address and the move character instruction. And that's what I actually did. I removed both the load address and the move character instruction to resolve this violation within program read update. Next page, please. That was our first scenario of a trailing check zone being overlaid. My second scenario is going to be a scenario of a beginning check zone being overlaid. So, we have our violation. It was reported by DFH SMO 102. The important part of that, again, is the code that's produced. Again, this is an OFOX O'Charlie, and we can use our Kix Trace Entries manual to discover what that would offer us. Next page, please. This is the same as we went over on the first SMO 102, so I'm not going to bore you and go over it again. Just wanted you to have it in both areas, depending on where you were looking, if you're using the escalator. Next page, please. Again, abbreviated trace, just to get a quick look of what was going on. In this case, we've got transaction 310 going through task termination and releasing all the transaction storage, so this was caught at termination time. We see our famous XMIQ, TFIQ trace entries incrementing the violation count for the transaction as well as the terminal, and then our exception trace entry pointing out that the storage check failed for address 100, Baker Able 0. We want to look at expanded trace or full trace to get a better, more information. Next page, please. This is our full trace. Date area 2 showing our address of the storage, 100 Baker Able 0. This trace entry in date area 3 does have our length, which is hex 70 bytes long. Date area 4 should be our beginning check zone. As we can see, it's overlaid. Don't know if you notice or not, but it sure looks similar to part of the 32 bytes that we moved earlier in our first scenario and thought we fixed that. If we look at data area 5 at the end of him, we can see that the trailing check zone is intact. We see our Baker 000310. Data area 6 is storage previous to this storage. If you notice, at the very end of that previous storage, we see in the eye catcher that H.H.H, which, again, remember, we thought we had resolved that problem, and now I really recognize violated storage. But this is just showing, this is previous storage to our violated piece that got caught. So we can tell that looks like the violation actually happened in the previous piece, just got caught in this particular piece, 100 Baker Able 0. If we look at data area 7, that's data following our piece that got caught as being violated. Really not able to see much with him. So, our beginning check zone is overlaid this time, and it looks like the piece of storage previous to him was possibly also violated. Next page, please. I look at storage manager for this task, 310. 100 Baker Able 0 shows my length of 70. If I look at the next SCE, he's located at 1007.0, and he's 3.0 long, which tells me, and that is storage just previous to the piece of storage that I found violated. Remember, we saw on the browse earlier that it looked like his ending check zone was possibly overlaid as well, and that we, and you remember, we thought we'd have resolved that problem. Next page, please. This is storage browse showing just that. 100 Baker Able 0 is our affected piece of storage that got caught. We can see his beginning check zone is overlaid. If you look at the eye catcher there, we can see his trailing check zone is intact. And if you look at the 1007.0 piece of storage, we can see his beginning check zone is intact, but his trailer is overlaid with recognizable data that we just thought we would resolve. So now I'm scratching my head. But we can tell that the violation is at least 16 bytes long because we now know the trailing check zone of the previous piece of storage is overlaid, which is 8 bytes, and my beginning check zone is overlaid for 100 Baker Able 0 for 8 bytes. So I know my violation is at least 16 bytes. Next page, please. Again, it's nice to know who did the get mains for these two pieces of storage. Remember, you have to add 8 to a task piece of storage when you're looking for the address of a get main piece in a trace. So I searched for 1007.8 as well as 100 Baker Able 8 that are highlighted in blue there. If I take each of them and back up to the EIP entry get main trace entry above them, I want to note the Reg 14 values. Looks like they're very close, Charlie 10 Able 2 and Charlie 10 Charlie Able. Both pieces are very close together, so probably within the same application. Next page, please. I use loader domain and those Reg 14 values, remembering to add the 28 to my load point for my stub, my assembler stub. I can calculate the offsets again, I'm in program read update, which I'm still in the back of my mind trying to remember that I resolved or thought I resolved that earlier issue, but this time my beginning check zone is overlaid for this piece of storage. Next page, please. But what I know now with an SMO-102 is that task 310 was terminating. I had an OFOXO Charlie trace entry. My violated piece of storage was at 100 Baker Able Zero. It was 70 bytes long. My leading check zone was overlaid with the value you see in red there. I know my violation is at least 16 bytes long, 8 for the overlaid piece of check zone and 8 bytes of the trailing check zone in the previous piece of storage. And storage at 100 Baker Able Zero is a victim of the previous piece of storage being violated. Also owned and allocated to task 310. And again, my program did the git main for both pieces, was read update, and he's likely the candidate that wrote past his allocated storage. When, where, why, we really don't know because this is just an SMO-102 dump. So I'm going to turn my trap on to catch an SMO-103 dump and create a window of opportunity when he did this. Next page, please. That's what I did. I got my SM-103 produced, noting my code, 0932. Next page, please. If I wanted to look it up, I would look it up in the Kix Trace manual. We've already looked at this, but I wanted you to have it again. Next page, please. So looking at the full trace, we're just going to skip abbreviated trace. What I see is an exit of a git main. Noting my reg 14 value, my trap runs in green, the SMCK entry and exits, and then I did the application did a suspend, noting the reg 14 on that. In green again, my trap runs with an entry trace point but no exit, and my famous XMIQ, TFIQ trace points are put out, incrementing the storage violation count for the transaction and the terminal. And then I have my exception trace entry showing the zone check failed, date area free, telling me my address of the storage that was affected or violated, date area 4 showing the beginning check zone was overlaid, date area 5, if you look at him at the very end of the date area 5, would you can see that the trailing check zone is intact. This time it's task 313 because it's a different run. Next page, please. If I look at storage manager for task 313, there's my SCE. It tells me my piece of storage was 70 bytes long. We back up a page because I didn't note down the address of our affected storage. Okay, we're worried about 100 Baker Able Zero. Next page, please. All right, so 100 Baker Able, yeah, that is our piece, the first piece. Hex 70 bytes long. The piece of storage above him is at 1007.0, and he was 3.0 long. Just getting the layout. Next page, please. We look at this in browse mode. We again see what we expected to see. Our beginning check zone for 100 Baker Able Zero was violated. The previous piece of storage at 1007.0 has the trailing check zone violated with very familiar data, the H.H.H. And we can see at 100 Baker Able Zero, his trailing check zone is intact. We now know, again, we do recognize this as being data that we thought we had corrected previous. We know we have at least 16 bytes of storage overlaid. Next page, please. I did the calculations of the offset in the program read update using when we found the Gittin, or when we used our window there. We found that the violation or the window was between the exec git main for hex 70 bytes of storage. Remember, this is actually 5 Charlie. If you look at the top, we round it to the next double word boundary and add hex 10. That's why we git main 70 bytes. And we did a set to point reg 8 to point at that storage. But this is a different offset. We're at able to is where we return from the git main. And we see those same two instructions, the load address and the reg 9 of Free Baker Charlie. And then the move character off of reg 9 for 32 bytes. Followed by the suspend command. That's our window right there when we caught the violation between the return of the git main and the issuing of that suspend. But notice we're working with reg 9. If you look to the top, we set reg 8 to point at that git main storage. Wonder what reg 9 was pointing at. I believe that's on the next page. Please. Page. Yeah. This is backing up. Just to show you, before the git main of the 5 Charlie piece of storage, or I also had a git main of 3 Baker Charlie set in reg 9 to point at that piece of storage. So again, I've got those same two instructions that actually caused the violation, and it's because I bumped that reg 9 in a different spot to do the same thing, and then did the move character of the 20 bytes past that. So again, this is our culprit again, just a different spot, and again, that window could have been much larger. I'm giving you a very simplified version. For example, if that window was quite large and you were walking that code and just could not get closer to it, that's when you would consider possibly putting in additional user trace points to close that window up a little. Next page, please. This is just, again, showing offset 806 of the 32 bytes that I moved, just as we did in the first scenario. Next page, please. What we found this time is, again, program read update was our responsible party. The violation was caught between the exec git main command issued at offset able 0 and the exec suspend command issued at offset charlie 4. We inspected read update and we found that register 8 pointed to the violated storage and register 9 pointed to the storage previously git main. And register 9 was incremented by 3 Baker Charlie just prior to that move character instruction to move the 32 bytes or the hex 20 bytes. And it was that move instruction that caused the violation, actually overlaying the trailing check zone of the previous piece, moving 32 bytes into the piece that actually got caught and why the dump was produced. Again, possible solutions. I realize, again, you could fix this in many ways, but if you truly wanted to move data into the storage address by register 9, then, again, you could adjust the incrementation of register 9 to a better value that would fall within the git main piece. If the move wasn't meant to be, you could remove the move character instruction or possibly both the load address and the move character instruction. That's what happened here. I just basically had two instructions, the load address and the move character. Rogue instructions somehow ended up in this program and causing me the violation. Another possible thing you could do is if the register usage was incorrect, then register 9 versus register 8, then you could correct the register usage and increment the value to fit within the storage that was git main. Next page, please. That's all I really had. That's our two scenarios to walk through the debug. This is just a plug for the Kix eSupport, our Kix web support site. Real good site to see. If you haven't been there, it's very valuable in the information that you can get off of there. I'll let you read this for yourself. Next page, please. This is just a reference page. Next page, please. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages point you to webcasts and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages let you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. I'll now turn this back over to our moderator for a short polling session.
Thank you, Scott, for a great presentation. At this point, Duane, we would like to open up the line for questions.
Very good. For the phone audience, to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1. And if you've been utilizing your mute button, you'll want to make sure that's disengaged. First question comes from Bob Kemplin.
Yes, in the second example, both the culprit and the victim were both running on the quasi-reentrant TCB. So if you had set check task to end of dispatch, you would have been pointing to the culprit as opposed to the victim. Problem with doing that is there is not a check task end of dispatch function in CICS at this time. Comments?
I'm not sure I fully understand that. I'd certainly love to entertain
the
question. Could I maybe get you to that one offline? Just so everyone knows, my email address is mccclures. At us.ibm.com. That's McClure S. I don't think I fully understand that question just hearing it the first time. I wasn't expecting that one, so sorry.
Okay. It just is to run the storage chains when a task is going to be suspended. So if the culprit messes with the storage, and when it goes to suspend, you run the chains then, and that way you catch the culprit as opposed to doing the check task current, where you're really looking at the victim, who may or may not be the culprit.
That's true. We used to, I think you might be alluding to, we used to allow all tasks to be checked, and we took that away, and we only do current now. But in that scenario, I would suspect I would see the application do suspend. My storage violation trap would run and find everything for that current piece of current task okay. I would see another task running. And then when my suspended task woke up and did another command to cause the violet trap to run, he would catch him at that time, which would be pure indication that he was total victim versus possibly doing it to himself.
Yeah, he did have to run more chains at end of dispatch, but you would be running the chains fewer times instead of at every ECI request. So it might be a trade-off, but you'd be pointing to the culprit.
Right, and in the scenario that we're talking about here, it would probably take a DFH trap to actually catch what we're talking about. But at least the storage violation trap I would be able to tell that, or you would be able to tell that I was victim because I didn't spring until I woke back up, meaning someone else ran in between there and messed me up, and when I got redispatched, I was caught. that would be a clue that, you know, you need a deep, a better trap.
All right, well, thank you.
Again, star one if you have a question. And the queue is open at this time. Just another moment. No further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you, Dwayne. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. And remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site early next week. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Scott, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.